Hello, welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Becky Fine, co-creator of Powerful Voices Project and producer of next week's production of Eve Ensler's Vagina Monologues. Hello, Becky.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited. We are really looking forward to hearing all about your creative projects. But first, we always have to go to news and events with Outbeat member Greg Maralia.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Maralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, April 6, 2014. A transgender student at an Oregon Christian university has been denied school housing on the basis of his gender identity. J.C. Marcus of Portland is a transgender man and a sophomore at George Fox University, located in Newburgh, Oregon. And like many of the school's students, he applied for on-campus housing, aiming to be housed in one of the school's male dormitories. According to the Portland-based LGBTQ magazine PQ Monthly, a letter from George Fox University's Dean of Community Life, Mark Potiff, said the school has denied the student's request for housing as it is in the process of revising its housing policy to explicitly state that students must be housed with students of the same assigned birth sex, citing the school's theological and philosophical statement. After a failed attempt to sort matters out with the school, attorney Paul Southwick, who represents Marcus, filed a Title IX complaint with the U.S. Department of Education. The school's treatment of Marcus may also violate the Oregon Equality Act, which specifically prohibits housing discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And here in California, with 8 confirmed cases of bacterial meningitis in the Los Angeles area over this year, county health officials are encouraging residents, especially men who have sex with men, to get vaccinated regardless of their HIV status. The County of Los Angeles Public Health issued new vaccination guidelines for men who have sex with men earlier this week, noting that 4 of the 8 confirmed cases occurred in men who live or socialize in the LGBT-dense West and North Hollywood areas. Public health officials also noted that this outbreak differs from the other similar alerts issued in 2012 and 2013 because of the commonalities between those diagnosed. 3 of those infected were between the ages of 27 and 28. According to the public health announcement, bacterial meningitis is a sporadic and uncommon bacterial infection of the blood or the lining of the brain and spinal cord that can affect the entire body. The infection can cause brain damage, hearing loss, and even death. The bacteria can spread by very close exposure to sneezing and coughing or direct contact with saliva or nose mucus. Disease symptoms may include high fever, a stiff neck, altered mental status, skin rash, severe headache, low blood pressure, aversion to bright lights, and generalized muscle pain. Symptoms usually occur within 5 days of the exposure, but may be present as many as 10 days after exposure. The disease progresses rapidly, so immediate diagnosis and treatment is imperative. The public health announcement stresses that meningitis is generally less contagious than the flu and cannot be spread through casual contact like sharing a room with an infected person. But for those who are at greater risk, including anyone with a compromised immune system, like those who are HIV positive, the infection can spread through shared saliva or mucus, including by shared smoking devices, including marijuana, cigarettes, hookah, beverages, or through kissing or coughing. And here locally, the LGBT Studies program, in partnership with the theater department at Napa Valley College, is presenting the Napa Valley premiere of the new documentary, Matt Shepard is a Friend of Mine. This special event will take place at Napa Valley College at the Performing Arts Center, coming up on Thursday, April 17th at 7 p.m. The college welcomes the greater community to join in this premiere. Matt Shepard is a Friend of Mine follows director Michelle Hossaway, a close friend of Matt's, as she travels to pivotal locations in Shepard's life, interviewing other friends and family members, and gaining insight into the beautiful life and devastating loss of Matthew Shepard. Napa Valley College has had close ties with the story of Matthew Shepard since 2001, when Matthew's mother, Judy Shepard, first spoke at the college to a crowd of over 1,000. In 2002, Professor Jennifer King introduced the Laramie Project play. Judy Shepard returned to Napa Valley in 2008 and took part in a live reading of the play. Professor King then returned to the stage in 2012 with a production of the Laramie Project 10 years later. Each of these events engaged audiences in discussions that have proven to be powerful in promoting an inclusive and accepting community. Napa Valley College is proud to have been chosen as a place to host a showing of this new film. You can get tickets online, $8 for general admission, or at the door for $10. We have a link to ordering those tickets on our own website at outbeatnews.com. And be sure to stay tuned later in tonight's Outbeat Radio show. We'll have some tickets to give away. For more information about LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatnews.com. You can follow us there on Facebook and Twitter all week long for the latest LGBT news and information from here in the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
And if you just joined us, this is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan. I'm Sheridan. And we are in studio this evening with Becky Fine, one of the co-producers of the Powerful Voices Project, as well as producing the Vagina Monologues that is happening on April 12th, which is next Saturday.
Next Saturday. It's coming up. Yeah.
So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. So before we get moving on the Vagina Monologues, Becky, we want to know more about Positive Voices Project.
Powerful.
Powerful. What did I say?
Well, it's positive,
it's also
too.
Positive voices.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Powerful. Yeah. You know what? I saw powerful. Yeah. Sorry. Powerful Voices Project.
Yeah,
so tell
absolutely.
Us about that and how did it come about? And,
sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yep. So we've been working on the Powerful Voices Project. Frances McCorkle, my visionary partner and co-producer of the Powerful Voices Project, she and I met 5 or 6 years ago through an AmeriCorps service here in Santa Rosa, or I guess north in Santa Rosa, and we were working at an elementary school through a program called CalServes. And she and I met and quickly became friends. And it was, you know, you'll hear it in our trailer in a little bit here, but it was after having met each other and gotten to be pretty close that we started having conversations around experiences in our lives, and we came upon sort of a common theme that we had between us around just around sexual assault experiences that neither of us had really named or identified with, and for both of us it was many years in the past at this point, and you know, we landed on that point in the conversation, and we kind of had to pause for a second and said, whoa, you know, never really said this out loud before, and it has really changed the way I feel about it to know that there's another person who has a, you know, very similar experience, if not by nature, definitely by emotional processing and picture of the process that goes into the healing there, and the path and the surviving, this kind of thing. From there, we became crisis line counselors at Verity, which at the time was United Against Sexual Assault. And so we went through a very intensive training to become crisis line counselors there, where we started talking to people, other people, about their experiences and hearing what they were going through. And, you know, just through lots and lots of conversations, we started really picking out some profound common themes among everybody that we spoke with, pretty much everybody that we spoke with about this who'd had some kind of sexual assault experience in their past, and some real common themes around self-blame and guilt and shame and repression and not identifying what it was and why it was not feeling quite right. And so there are a lot of really important themes that we felt like needed to start connecting. We felt like survivors needed to start recognizing that there were other people and that this looks a little different for a lot of people, but this is a very big issue that we're dealing with, and there are a lot of survivors there. So from there, we recognized that we had some complementary and very different skills that we could bring to a project like this. And at that point, we'd finished our service with AmeriCorps, And I had moved to New York to do a grad school program in New York. And so I had come back, and she and I would hang out a lot. And you know, I remember we were sitting on a curb in Occidental after having breakfast out there, and I was about to hop on a plane to go back to New York. And we said, you know, we need to create something here. We really, really need to create something. And at the same time, actually, about 6 months or 8 months before, Frances had started school at Brooks Institute of Photography in Southern California. And so she was working on this photography, and she was learning about video journalism and really starting to see the power of video as a means to share a message and to talk about a social issue. So at the same time, I'm studying public health in New York City, and with an emphasis in sexual and reproductive health and sexual violence. And so kind of combined, we had this interesting, you know, creative and artistic training, and this an academic and public health training. And together, you know, it started out, the project started out as a road trip. After graduation, we were going to hop in a car and drive around the country and interview people, and we picked out cities, and we were going to create a book at the time. It was going to be a photo book where I would write stories of the interviews, and Frances would take photos of it. And that evolved into videos for a few reasons. That became the passion and focus of Frances's, and also we just really recognized that videos were such a strong medium for this type of message. And these short videos, we started out as a documentary. You can see this is an evolving path, and we really landed on something kind of solid at this point. But where we started with a full-length documentary, we've shortened it to short 5 to 10 minute videos of each individual. And we recognize that, you know, with the YouTube sensation, this kind of thing, 5 minute videos are a really approachable way to get a message out. And so here we are today, and we have the Powerful Voices Project, which is primarily videos, short videos at this point. We've got a few trailers out and several videos released on our website, and it's looking to evolve into curriculum and outreach, and getting this word out around survivors specifically. Our tagline is enhancing the conversation around sexual assault and its survivors. You know, the premise is kind of, we've got this huge issue that a lot of people share. They have a common past of, and yet it's still such a hidden, sort of dark, in the shadows issue. And we're really looking to shine some light around it. And the premise is, while it can never be said that sexual assault is a good thing, it certainly can't be said that good things don't come from it. And we've found that a lot of creativity and a lot of empowerment is sometimes rooted in traumatic experiences. And we're looking to highlight those stories of thriving and healing that can be found along the path of healing from an experience such as this.
So in all of your travels and interviews with different people, can you think of a couple of good things that have come out of your come out of these people's lives when you say that, you know, good things have come out of it? Can you think of anything?
Certainly. Do you mean specifically for myself or for people that I've spoken with, or all
you,
of the above?
Yeah, all of the above.
All of the above. Yeah, well, sure. Certainly. You know, I have to, you know, when I was young, I knew that this was the path I wanted to head down. The realm of health education, specifically sexual health and public health, was something that appealed to me from around 15 or 16, before I knew the term public health. But, you know, I would, speaking specifically for myself, you know, I know that a lot of my path and my career is rooted in an experience that is traumatic. And in my process of healing and empowerment, I've found that the best thing I can do for my own healing is speaking with other people and helping other people to find empowerment and putting the name to that. So I think that would be my story. Other stories that we've heard about, people have really found their voice, and I mean that in a very literal sense, through the path of healing after traumatic experiences. You know, we spoke with one woman who has become a singer and a musician, and she really credits that with having been so silenced and so abused, and that finding her voice was so much a part of her healing journey and path. You know, we've certainly spoken with a lot of people who've become advocates in some way or another, a lot of people working in social services around this. You know, certainly that's not everybody, but we're seeing a lot of art come out of these experiences, a lot of expression. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as to name a few. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not clear if it's just women you're talking to, or men, or all over the map.
Thank you for that. Yeah, absolutely. It's we're talking to survivors across the board, and that spans all genders, mm-hmm. most certainly.
Mm-hmm. Is it hard for them to come forth? I'm curious about that. How do you find people you want to film?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
how does that happen?
Absolutely. We have we very strictly believe that this is a step in somebody's journey that they need to decide on their own. For that reason, we don't do any active recruitment. The way that we find people is by letting people know that we exist and say, when you feel like you would like to share your story with someone, please reach out to us. Now, the challenge around that is one thing we find in the realm of sexual assault is that identifying that that's the experience we had is a very huge piece of the process, and a difficult one. Identification is sort of your number one step in the journey towards healing and productivity and empowerment. And so we've got a lot of people who don't necessarily recognize that that was their experience. So part of our goal right now is to illustrate the diversity that we see within that, and to kind of put some words to this gray area, so to speak. You know, it's the issue of sexual assault is presented in such a black and white. You know, this is and this is not what sexual assault is, and that's just not the case. It looks so different for so many people. And, you know, I'll say it's only within the last 2 or 3 years that the FBI definition of sexual assault started to include any gender of perpetrator, any gender of victim, and that it didn't have to have marks on one's body to prove that consent was not given. And so, you know, it's 2012 was when that happened. So, you know, if we're talking about the FBI definition being, you know, kind of in many ways quite archaic up to this point, we can see why society overall doesn't have a real clear understanding of what this is and what it looks like.
If there's somebody that's listening right now and they wanted to get in touch with you, what would you tell them? How do they contact you?
Absolutely, yeah. There are two ways that I would suggest. Our website is powerfulvoicesproject.com. And right on the website, we've got a contact us and a share your story link on there. You can submit a story right through the website, or you can find our email address there, which is journeyofpowerfulvoices@gmail.com.
And I'm sorry, but when you said right through our website, do you mean R-I-G-H-T or W-R-I-T-E?
Good clarification. Actually, both. Our website does have an embedded form in it that you can type right in there, and it's delivered to our inbox. It also has our email address, our Facebook, our Twitter, kind of all of that contact information is right there on our website, which is powerfulvoicesproject.com.
And then if somebody did write to you and wanted to share their story with you, what would they expect? Do you call them? Do you... you know, make a mutually agreeable date and you bring the video equipment right away? Or do you make a relationship first and get them comfortable? What's your way of dealing with it?
We have a written out process around this. I'm glad you asked. We make contact, and we generally first start via email. We ask a few questions, and we let people know what the process will be, which is, you know, our first conversation is without any video equipment. It's a let's just get to know each other. Let's go over the scope of the project. What is it that we're doing here? You know, why are we doing this project and what it means? And especially being clear on, you know, what does it mean to have a video posted on YouTube? These kinds of things. Having it is really our goal to take anonymity out of this, and so we have some very clear language and documents around. We want an individual who comes to speak with us to be very clear and very comfortable with the idea of being public with this story. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Thank you. How do you protect yourself with that? I mean, you know. As far as legally, you know, how do you protect if a person comes and say, yeah, I'm ready, but then realize I'm on YouTube all everywhere. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
I'm just curious about that.
We do have some legal contracts that we ask people to sign up front. One of them is sort of a standard media release that just says that we own this footage technically after the footage is taken. We can do with it whatever we would like in the future. It's some very kind of almost scary legal jargon around it. So because of that, we have a document that follows up that we call Our Promise, Your Promise.
And that sounds nice.
Yeah, we present it and we say, you know, I know that was a little scary. There was some really intense language in there, and we have to kind of do that to protect ourselves. Now we want to sign this document. All of us will sign it that says, we promise you that we respect your journey. We respect your story. We will not use anything that you do not want us to use. And we ask that you promise us that if there is at any point something that you don't want to appear in this video or that you don't want this video to be posted, that you let us know as soon as possible so that we minimize our work around it or work with you, you know, along those lines. You know, we've had a couple of people say, you know, could you hold off on release until a later date? And we say, yes, you know, yes, of course. And it's our promise. We're certainly not going to take these videos and say, oh, it's ours now. It's, you know, you're out of luck. Nothing like that.
It sounds like you deal with it very compassionately.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good sitting in the studio with you and just looking at you and really believing you, you know, and I know that's coming across to the listeners out there.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. Well, you have a trailer that we wanted to play off the YouTube. Could you introduce it, and then we'll just go ahead and play the audio portion. And I think it's available to people if they'd like to see the video on YouTube too. So maybe you can give all that information, and then we'll play the audio.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is the video that's right on the homepage of our website, and we created this one a little ways into our project, actually, in response to, in an effort to really clarify what the project was about and who are we and why are we coming to this, and you know, why are we qualified to be doing this kind of work. So we created this video maybe 2 years or a year and a half or so ago, and we wanted to just use it to show the world what the project was.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
We were both in our late teens and early 20s when we each experienced sexual assault. Though it wasn't until our mid-20s, after having met one another, that we slowly shared and uncovered our own and each other's stories.
Now we realize that until that conversation, neither of us had really named our experiences as sexual assault or rape.
We had only ever viewed those experiences as shameful pieces of our past, generally full of guilt, denial, and self-blame. We're learning more and more every day about the immensity of this global epidemic of sexual assault.
Nearly 1 billion people in the world have experienced some form of sexual assault in their lifetime.
In each other, we found an ally, someone to relate and reflect with about an experience that had previously felt isolating and somewhat incomprehensible.
With this connection, we felt empowered and relieved in a big way, and together we began down a path of activism and awareness raising around sexual assault and survivor empowerment.
We became sexual assault crisis line counselors and started to listen to the stories of other survivors of sexual assault in its many forms.
It was the first time I sort of realized how prevalent it was, how many different ways it can happen and how often it does happen, but at the same time, how similar so many of the stories are.
We began to learn about not only the immense prevalence of sexual assault and how so many of us have experienced it in some form, but also about the themes and the commonalities in how we all process the experience.
Most of the people we would speak with expressed such similar sentiments of uncertainty of whether what had happened to them was okay or not.
Many suggested that their experience was not such a big deal when compared with others.
Many believed that they had somehow brought it on themselves.
And many didn't know who they could talk to about it.
I feel like we clicked. We had a realization that this was something that was important to us to explore further. And so I'd say that was sort of the dawning of the journey of Powerful Voices.
We set out to create an empowering community space where people could share their stories and open up these conversations.
We want to bring it out into the open. Our hope is that people see these interviews and they connect with them and they share with somebody if they're ready to do so.
It's not something I've ever said publicly, but it's something happened to me when I was young. So, it can happen to anybody at any time, at any age. That's the thing, isn't it?
It really is, it really is. And the idea that no matter who you are, if you specifically have experienced this or not, you undoubtedly know somebody who has. The statistics show it's, yeah, just massive numbers of people. And there are still so many people who don't believe it or don't see that that's what's really happening. And, it's just there's so many of us. The Journey of Powerful Voices is a series of short films, each one dedicated to an individual who approaches us, ready to share her or his story.
The films are devoted to illuminating stories of strength and productivity that can be realized along the path of healing after a sexual assault.
We are inviting women and men who have a story to share to connect with us. There are many ways to express your story. Through film, art, writing, dancing, or any way that makes you feel comfortable. We welcome everyone.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
And I encourage the listening audience to check that out on YouTube. Excuse me. And because the visuals are lovely too, and then we get to see Frances, mm-hmm, who's not here tonight with you,
yeah,
and we get to see her and hear her voice as well. And she's the videographer, right?
That's right. Yep, so. She brings the video and photography element.
Yeah, so beautiful. How long did it take to make that trailer?
That one, quite a while, actually. Yeah, it took many iterations. We had done our. And it was a good experience. We put ourselves in front of the camera, as we'd been asking other people to do, and we said, we should probably have this experience also. And it was a real challenge, and it helped us in the way that we shape the interviews and the way that we set up the interviews. It was really helpful, a good experience to be in front of the camera like that. And then of course we're far more critical of ourselves than we are of anybody else, and so editing our own voices and our own faces was more challenging, I would say, than it's been to edit, yeah, other people. So yeah, it was a good experience. It had many drafts, and we're very pleased with this final one. And it's been great to see how our interviews have gotten better, our videos have gotten better. It's very much a growth process, and our questions. We've learned a lot about asking questions, and those have gotten better as well.
Excellent. Yeah, it's such a process, isn't it? It's great that you guys decided you wanted to go through what you're asking others to do. I think that makes us, keeps us humble, you know, and keeps us kind of in the present time of what it is for others to go through all that stage fright and, you know, being uncomfortable. And it helps us be a little more compassionate, I think. So I think that's terrific that you both did that.
Thank you. Yeah.
Let's segue into the Vagina Monologues production that's happening on Saturday, because it's a benefit for the Powerful Voices Project, right?
Yes.
So could you tell us a little bit how this came to be?
Sure. Absolutely. So I, you know, the first time I saw the Vagina Monologues, I was maybe 20 or so, and I just remember it was a totally different style production than the one that we do, and that's what's unique about it. Every production is a little bit different depending on the director and the cast and everything. So this was a 4-woman show, and they read the monologues, you know, in different combinations, and I just remember walking out of the theater and feeling connected to a community in a way that I hadn't as a young woman before. You know, like, wow, these are people out there just talking about these issues so openly and so candidly and sharing these intimate stories and to all of us, you know. And I just immediately fell in love, and it became a personal goal of mine to at some point be involved with a production.
So I just need to interrupt you. When you say you were 20, that how long ago was that?
It was about 8 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, not
because you look 20, Becky.
Yeah, okay. Not terribly long ago. When I was a young woman back in the day. No, so not too far.
Okay.
So then I went to New York, and I was in a school of public health out there, and I looked around, and the program, you know, not only is this what we're talking about all the time, but the program was just about 80 to 90% women, you know, and I said, you know, why isn't the Vagina Monologues happening here? What, you know, what's happening? And so I started asking around, and it turned out that it had happened historically many times, and for the last year or two, nobody had picked it up. And so I set out to produce and direct a show at on campus out there. And so I ended up I produced and directed the show in New York 2 years in a row, and we raised something combined something close to $20,000 for the local domestic violence organization there. And it was just so rewarding and so creatively inspiring in a way that I hadn't, and I found that it was something I loved and I was good at, and it created this community. And so I came back to Sonoma County and of course reunited with Francis, and we had our own project, which hadn't up until that point been a nonprofit. And so we gained our nonprofit status somewhere around that time and said, hey, you know, now we can do this for our project. So last year and this year, it's been to benefit the Powerful Voices Project, and it's just so fitting into the big picture of V-Day and the Vagina Monologues and 1 Billion Rising, around just kind of ending violence against women and girls throughout the world, and it's certainly in line with our project.
Wow. I had no idea you had such a history with a production.
I just thought last year, and it was incredible last year. So you had some practice time in New York.
I had to say, a very different experience working on a campus, specifically with students, and transitioning that into a community production. Very, you know, and I loved the diversity that came with that. You know, and while in the campus production, we had an age range that was about 24 to, you know, 33 or so, we got to expand our age range from about 20 to, you know, 75 or 80, and that's a really cool element of this show. And this year we see a similar age diversity among our cast, which I really love.
Yeah, so I don't know if we should play Break the Chain now, or if we should talk a little bit more. Let's talk about Break the Chain. How does Break the Chain, the song, and the flash mob dance and the music, how does that all fit in with the Vagina Monologues?
Yeah. So Break the Chain is sort of the newly acclaimed V-Day anthem, they call it. It was written 2 years ago in time for the 1 Billion Rising movement that happened on February 14th, 2013. Or I should say that started on February 14th, 2013 and is now an annual event. And so I believe, and I don't know who the creators of the song are, but they created it on behalf of V-Day. So it's very specifically speaking about the movement that we're working towards with 1 Billion Rising. And something that's exciting about our production is that we'll be doing a live rendition of the V-Day anthem there with a team of drummers led by Sheridan and a piano player and a couple.
And who's singing?
I will be singing that song with a friend of mine who's a phenomenal singer who I met in high school. And so that's an exciting thing. And I think it's been a goal of mine for all four productions thus far to really integrate music throughout. I find it to be just the element that makes many individual monologues into one single story, and the music really ties everything together. So we're fortunate to have both Sheridan and Diana right here who are working on the music side of things.
Let's go into the song Break the Chain. And again, we're getting this off a YouTube feed, so if people would like to see the video, you see people dancing the flash mob dance that was choreographed by Debbie Allen, and you can hear the song as well. So let's take a listen.
But before we go to that music break, if you would like two tickets to go see Matt Shepard Is a Friend of Mine on April 17th at Napa Valley College, give us a call right now at 584-2020. That's 584-2020. We'll give those two tickets away to caller number one.
I raise my arms to the sky. On my knees, I pray. I'm not. I will walk 1 billion rising.
Woo. Woo. Yeah, release it. That was nice.
And we're, how many dancers are going to be in your production?
We're hoping for 25 to 30. And so if you're someone out there who knows that dance, come and do the dance at our show.
Really?
Absolutely. Come. We're looking for a few more people.
So what if there's people in the audience who bought tickets but they didn't rehearse or anything? Can they get up and dance?
Sure. Wow. Do you mean people who know the dance already?
Yeah,
absolutely. If they know the dance already and if they just feel like dancing, they're welcome to anyway.
Oh, that sounds fun. Can you tell us a little bit about the venue and the dates and the contact stuff?
Yes, absolutely.
Let's get people in those seats, honey.
Yeah, we want to fill up that venue. So we'll be performing at the Glazer Center, which is in downtown Santa Rosa, 547 Mendocino Avenue. Tickets are can be purchased at powerfulvoices.brownpapertickets.com. And so the show is on Saturday, April 12th at 7:30, and doors are opening at 7 p.m. We've got some fine micro brews and wine and delicious baked goods, both savory and sweet, to enjoy for half an hour before, not to mention many incredible raffle prizes if you're interested in perusing the raffle prizes. So we're encouraging early arrival to enjoy all that we have to offer before the show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and they have good raffle prizes. I remember last year. It was so fun.
Yeah,
I'm just so excited. I'm just getting really excited for this show.
Yeah, it's going to be a really great one. The Glazer Center is a beautiful, beautiful venue with incredible sound and acoustics and just a really nice stage. I'm excited about a nice stage.
So speaking of tickets...
Yes, we would love to offer 2 tickets to the 4th caller who calls in the next few minutes. We have 2 free tickets with your name on it to the 4th caller. Please start calling in. But for those of you who perhaps are not the 4th caller, do visit us at powerfulvoices.brownpapertickets.com.
Nice, yeah. You know, it's interesting about these tickets. It's the first time I've ever seen a sliding scale kind of thing where you can buy tickets for whatever you can afford. It's not just one price, which I thought that was really ingenious and very thoughtful for people who might not have, you know, the top number. So for those of you who want to call in, here is the phone number. Please call 707-584-2020. Think of it as clear vision, you know. You got 20/20 vision. You're going to come and see the monologues. I feel like I'm pitching for our auction, you know, for our pledge night. Anyway, it's 584-2020, and that's caller number 4 for a pair of tickets to Vagina Monologues and Becky and Francis's organization. The Powerful Voices Project is the beneficiary.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Becky, there's caller number 1. My sister Darian is in studio, and she's going to be calling you, and answering your phone, and she will let you know what caller you are. So hopefully you get those tickets. Anyway, Becky, if you had a dream, like you want a dream come true, what would your dream be?
I guess what we're talking on a professional capacity here. I would love to live in a home out in Petaluma. No. Okay. We're talking about this.
Yes.
Got you. So I'm really interested in broadening this conversation, enhancing this conversation, and really working towards putting the issue of sexual assault and specifically survivor empowerment into the mainstream conversation. You know, we need to be changing the way that we present this on TV. We need to be changing the way that we're talking about this. And, you know, I want us to be a big piece of that. And right now my focus is on universities. I work in the local universities here in Sonoma County, and we are facing the universities across the country right now are facing some sweeping mandates around education and prevention of sexual assault and survivor empowerment. And so, you know, I think it's really important to be a part of that and to get our project as much as possible in there. So in addition to how do we prevent this, it's a what does it look like when it's happened and who are the people we're talking about? You know, I look at it a lot as putting a face on the issue and how we can if we put a face on the issue, we can prevent it in a lot of ways. If we say, look, it's happening to all these people and this is what it means. Now, this is why it's so important that we increase our communication and we just change the way that we've got dynamics in the society right now.
So when you say working in universities, what's happening in the universities?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So come October, actually last October, the federal government enforced what's called the Campus Save Act, and that's the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act. So that was when it was introduced, and come October 2014, it's going to be mandated and enforced. And you know, so what this includes is every student, staff, and faculty person at every university across the country will go through sexual assault training, prevention training, and not just a one time. Here's 2 hours. This is what it looks. It's an ongoing training throughout your time at university. And one of the important reasons we're focusing on universities right now is because we're seeing, statistically speaking, people are experiencing this. If we're talking about adults experiencing this, children experiencing this is another element. But that 18 to 24-ish range is a really powerful time to intervene and educate. And it can change the way we live our lives. It can change the way that we treating our children. So that's a really key time to get in there. So prevention education is a huge element of it, which is the piece that I hope to be a part of there, combined with the law enforcement campus police will be a big part of it, where we're expanding the definition of sexual assault in a way that we haven't seen before, where it's including harassment and domestic violence and stalking, which are all big issues in the college age range. Other things, reporting needs to be streamlined, so it's a much easier and much more clear process for people to go through, and small, you know, smaller sort of subtly important details, such as where it used to be that if an individual reported an assault that happened to them and they happened to perhaps live in the same dormitory or where they were in the same class with that individual, it used to be the victim, the person who experienced the assault, that would be changed, that would be moved out of the dorm or would be transferred out of the class. Now it's the perpetrator, which is, you know, it's kind of this is a small detail, but a profound one.
Yeah,
you know,
profound.
When we talk about where the responsibility is being placed, I think that's an important one. And so the Campus Save Act is bringing that in. I'm very enthusiastic and optimistic the effect that this might have. And it's got some strong support from, it's being backed and enforced by the Department of Justice and the Department of Education from the federal government, headed by a task force with Vice President Joe Biden and many other key players. So it's a big, big deal, a big step in the world of sexual assault prevention in our society.
Could you say what the Campus Save Act is again? I tried to write it down, but I didn't
sure.
get all the letters.
Yeah, that A is in there to make a nice acronym. It's actually Sexual Violence Elimination.
Ah.
With just that, it's got a little A. Big S, big V,
I see,
big
I
E,
see.
Little A.
So if somebody wanted to find out about it, they can just go online and type in Campus Save Act and they would get all the information that you just talked about and probably more.
Yep, it'll pop right up. It's getting to be much more known among college campuses. Administrations are starting to be aware of it and starting to support the causes. There are a lot of big national grants around this right now. There's money where their mouth is, which is important. You know, this is being backed by
and so
by
this government. Is for so, universities and junior colleges,
yes,
and state universities and everybody,
private, public, community. Mm-hmm. it's across the board. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a long time coming, and so
yes.
So positive. I'm sorry, here I go again. Powerful Voices Project will be like ready to embrace it, to, you know, to so that you can have it, you know, filter through your program.
Yeah, you know, of course that's a pipe dream. That would be something that I would love to be a consultant or something along those lines with this. And you know, I see us as sort of riding a wave in a sense. Like finally we're seeing this eruption happen. You know, it's been so long bubbling, and we're finally kind of flowing over the edge and ready for this change. And so there's a lot of people who are sort of mobilizing and ready to jump into this to make the change happen.
Really?
Yeah.
You're in contact locally happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love seeing how much enthusiasm is. You know, I've not talked to one person who said, ooh, that's a bad idea. You know, everybody says, yeah, that's so important. And we're so glad that it's happening.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
So, Becky, we're coming up to the end of our show. We have about 3 minutes left. Yeah. And we always like to ask our guests for advice that they might have for someone who's struggling in your area of concern, let's say. So before we get to your advice, I'll give you a minute to think about it. I wanted to congratulate Karen Kibler for being our fourth caller. You have won 2 tickets, and they will be held at Will Call next Saturday night. Get there by 7 and pick up your tickets, and we hope you enjoy the show. We'd love for you to come and introduce yourselves to us, and then we know that you got them because you listened to the show, and that
yeah.
makes us very happy.
We look forward to seeing you there, Karen.
Yeah. So, advice for a person who has gone through a tragic event such as sexual assault and they don't know what to do. Advice to someone who experienced it in their younger years and now is hearing about it and maybe wants to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an important point. And, you know, I think I'll draw from the wisdom of the people that we've interviewed so far, you know, and one thing I would say almost every single person that we've spoken to, we ask this question of them, what would you say to somebody?
Ah.
You know, and across the board, we're hearing people say, just know that it's not your fault. No matter what happened, no matter when it happened, it's not your fault. And you are not alone in this. And that's really key. There are people who want to talk about it. There are people who are there to share that experience with you and take a little bit of that burden and decompress and release. And, you know, and I'll say for people who, you know, maybe we'll hear that somebody has experienced this. Maybe a friend or a family member comes to you and says, this is something I've experienced in my past. My advice for that is to believe them, you know, and how crucial it is to really believe when somebody says that and not question it. None of this, what were you wearing? What were you doing there? Why didn't you say something? Nothing like that. And so it's important that we listen to the stories, and it's important that we're sharing them.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really terrific advice. Yeah. Thank you.
Go ahead. You want to
say? I was just going to say, is there anything else that you would like the listeners to know about you, about your organization, about your production, you and Francis?
Yeah. I guess I just would like to really thank and honor you both for having me tonight and for talking about this issue and for talking about the many important issues that that you bring to this show. You know, it's such an honor to be doing this type of work and having an opportunity to talk about it is one of my greatest pleasures, certainly. So thank you both. Mm,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We want to really thank you, Becky. Sharon and I both, for your courage, you know, to speak out and to do this important work. So you're in high standards with us.
That means a lot to me.
Yes, we love your passion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we want to thank everyone for joining us tonight, and we want to remind you that to remember that, like Becky, you too can be living proof that through sharing your passions, you can use your creativity as another way to help the world. And that's what we think you're doing tonight, Becky, is helping the world. We'll be back next month, and until then,
good night.